Political commentator and writer Alex Kane is available for a conversation. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very good. It is a big week, Alex, isn't it? There's a lot happening this week.
It is. It is a huge week. I think we talked a couple of weeks ago. Well, I think we talked just before the last withdrawal, you know, agreement, meaningful vote. And so it was very important and went down a huge crash at that point. But this is simply, Frank, because we're getting closer and closer. If something goes wrong tomorrow, if she's defeated again tomorrow on her motion, does she survive? If she's ambushed by one of half a dozen amendments, which could derail her anyway, what happens? I mean, at this stage, we are no further on than we were back in, you know, the day after she became Prime Minister, with the Brexit means Brexit. We still have no idea, because you could pick from the top hat, you could pick six or seven varieties of Brexit which have supported across the Commons, but none of which have a majority support, and that's going to be the problem. Is it now possible to get enough people to rally around just one of these options? And I'm still not sure.
Do you think no deal will be off the table by the end of the week?
My instinct, and it is only my instinct in this, Frank, is that the Prime Minister, does not want a no deal situation. And for all the talk from some of the purest Brexiteers, those are the ones who want a clean break, you know, from the European Union. Even they, most of them want that as part of a deal of some sort, because it's all very well saying, oh, you know, we go in there, we stand alone, we stand brave, free and sovereign. That's not the way the world works anymore. The world is global now, and it's global and it's local at the same time. And just this notion of, oh, we'll just go out and immediately start trading on World Trade Organization rules, it doesn't work like that. You have to have done the deals with the countries involved. We haven't done those deals. I mean, it'd be brilliant if the Prime Minister or Jacob Rees-Mogg or Boris Johnson could get up, you know, tomorrow and go, well, look, here are examples of details. We've been working with countries on trade deals under WTO rules, which would kick on, you know, 1 minute past 11 o'clock on the 29th of March. We've done the whole work. None of that's been done. And I think even if you listen to the language of Mogg, Rees-Mogg last week, even to Boris Johnson, oh, well, you know, something could be done on the backstop. Yes, I think, you know, I think Rees-Mogg's line was, even with my reservations about the withdrawal agreement, if there's some resolution on the backstop, I would reluctantly support it. So even as some of that, the key members of the ERG organisation are coming round to the idea they don't want to just crash out, because no one, if we have no idea what's happening now, Frank, just imagine what would happen if we crash out. Nobody, because there won't be a stable government. There won't be any trade deals done. There won't be any game plan or strategy. Other countries, you'll be at a disadvantage. Imagine going to try and trade with somebody, work out a deal with someone that goes, you're stuck. You really need anything from us, right? Don't you? We'll do it in our terms. And that's the problem. No one in their right mind, hard Brexit, soft Brexit, no Brexit, nobody in their right mind wants a no deal situation.
But it's better to a lot of politicians than the backstop.
I'm not sure if it is in that sense, because I think the backstop became... My own instinct has always been, Frank, that the backstop will be resolved and that there will be a soft landing. I think some people deliberately used the border situation because we've been told, you know, the Labour and so on, Scottish nationalists, oh, they too, you know, if there's a bit of tinkering with the backstop, which probably can be done reasonably easily.
So how suddenly, can that be done? Because this is critical. How can it be done without embarrassing the DUP or without embarrassing the likes of Simon Coveney? How can the backstop be resolved?
I think it'll be resolved by putting the time limit on it, because I can't see it being withdrawn at this stage. You and I talked about this, I think, maybe at the time it was first introduced, which is what, 8-9 months ago, when it became formally part of the stuff. And I remember saying to you that it should never have been in there. The DUP overplayed their hand. That's how it ended up in that situation. But one thing we do know for definite, Frank, and this is the key, because there's 6 weeks ago in this, and it'll be a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and parsing and nuancing. Dublin, Belfast, Brussels, they do not want a hard border. They do not want all the problems that could flow from that. And not simply security, political, Good Friday, the other, you know, knock-on effects in Scotland. None of them want it. They will resolve that. I cannot tell you the form of words in which they will find the resolve, Frank, but they will resolve it, because the consequences of something going wrong in the London-Dublin relationship and the Belfast-Dublin relationship along the border are too, they're too big, they're too dangerous for any of those governments to contemplate. And whatever the relationship may be between Barnier and May, you know, they're both experienced politicians. They know that they a compromise is required there. And I think it sounds like a cop-out, but saying I don't know the form of words, Frank. They will, everything in my, I've followed politics for 50-odd years, everything in my fibre tells me that that will be sorted out in the same way that we'll sort out there will be a soft landing. The battle in the House of Commons is not primarily, we get carried away in Northern Ireland thinking that we are the centre of everything. It's not primarily about the backstop. It's primarily about the nature of the withdrawal agreement itself, or the terms upon which we lose. The battle is between those, some elements who think that, don't forget a few months ago, Frank, for Rees-Mogg and others, the withdrawal agreement, vassalage, that was the words, you know, that Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson used. They'd no mention of the backstop other than it irritated them, but the rest of it was vassalage. That's moved. Those people, as I said earlier, those people are thinking, well, do this and we can do something on the withdrawal agreement. And that's what May's doing at this minute. She's basically trying to say to Dublin, or to Brussels in particular, give me a soft landing and that I can get the rest of this through. And as I keep saying, if I go back to the Good Friday Agreement, 6 weeks before the Good Friday Agreement, everyone was saying, ooh, can't, no, too much. You get to the crunch moment. We're not quite at that crunch moment, but we're getting there.
Actually, one final question, and you're writing about it in the newsletter today. There's almost, how would I best describe this, an air of admiration for nationalism and for the proactive stance of nationalists and Republicans at that gathering at the waterfront on Saturday, where they had the Beyond Brexit, the future of Ireland. You think unionists should be as proactive as that?
Absolutely. I mean, if I was a nationalist, Frank, I would be doing exactly what they were doing at the waterfront, bringing together all the strands, because they have concerns. Well, unions sometimes think, oh, they shouldn't have, it's got nothing to do with them, you know, oh, the whole United Kingdom voted, blah, blah, blah. Very particular local matters, nationalists in Northern Ireland have concerns, and they've decided to work together to see if there's some way of doing it. Yes, some of them are probably pushing towards an all-Ireland, let's have a border poll agenda. Others, look, how are we protected if there is a hard Brexit or a no deal, whatever it is. It's the sort of conversation you have, Frank, and all I'm simply saying, and I know some unionists will get annoyed, oh, Alex, why are you saying this? Because it's what unionists should have been doing, because I think I mentioned in the article that in 2012, the celebration of the centenary of the Ulster Covenant, Peter Robinson made a speech. It was a joint unionist dinner saying, we need to bring together some of the brightest minds and thinkers and strategists, academics, historians, come together to prepare for, in 10 years' time, for the centenary of Northern Ireland. Bring us all together, find out what our difficulties are, find the best way of promoting the union. How do we make our beliefs more acceptable to people who have some, you know, discomfort with it? None of that happened. Nationalists thinking, we have a major challenge here with Brexit. We're not sure what's happening, but whatever happens, we want collectively to be ready. It's sensible politics, Frank. And unionists, sadly, and I speak as a unionist, sometimes we have a terrible habit of burying our heads in the sand and thinking it'll be all right in the night. Politics doesn't work like that anymore. You need to always be prepared. And while I don't agree with the nationalist interpretation of what's happening, I accept their right and I respect the fact that they have taken grasp the very difficult situation and decided, how do we create a game plan? How do we strategize? How do we get our own options ready? No one in their right mind would criticize them for doing that. And that, as a unionist, I would simply say to people who share my views on unionism, well, guys, stop complaining about them. That's of course they're going to do that. What do we collectively as unionists do in prep? And it's now down from 10 years from Robinson's speech. Now down to 3 years away from the centenary. What is unionism offering, you know, particularly if there's a hard Brexit or no deal or something goes wrong on the day, which I don't think it will, but just in case, what are our options?
Okay.
It makes sense to be prepared, Frank.
Alex, thank you very much indeed. You can read that in the newsletter this morning under the banner, Alex Kane, Unionism, like nationalism, should be exploring options. Your opinions are very, very welcome, as always.